Good Monday morning to you, and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. We have a unique format here at Jump in Tucson. Every day there's a different theme. We have engagement with Ted Maxwell on Tuesdays. We have Grant Kruger in on Wednesdays talking about restaurants and a little bit of politics. We have Thursday, we have Tom Moulton, who talks about attractions and hotels in concert with a Visit Tucson. And then I talk on Fridays about business success stories. On Mondays, we talk about wonder at the University of Arizona. There's so many things that are going on at the University of Arizona, financially, the athletic department, reorganization, even some tragedies that have happened. And so the U of A gets a lot of press. And when we started Jump in Tucson, one of the things I wanted to do was to focus on some of the cool things that are going on every single day at the U of A in research and education and student learning. And the outcomes that there are lots of about 10,000 people work in the middle of town and do a lot of good work for the community and for the state and for the nation at that. In fact, we've talked about how every program that NASA has had since its inception has been the U of A has led the mission or has been part of those missions. So there's lots of great stories like that. We have an interesting one today. We have Zach Guido, who's here. He is from the Arizona Institute of Resilience. He's a research faculty member. Good morning.
Good morning, Ed.
So tell us a little bit about Zach's journey. How did you get to the University of Arizona? What's your educational journey, and what was your interest to get you kind of launched in your career?
Well, it's been a long journey. I've been at the University of Arizona since about 2008, mm-hmm. so 16 years. And I would say I received a PhD from the School of Natural Resources and Environment there in 2015, I think. Might have been 2014, mm-hmm. Thinking about water issues. Actually, not water issues, not in the Southwest, broader, more international water issues, which I'll get into in a minute. But, you know, I got into science really because I just wanted the adventure of it. I wanted to see the world. I wanted to see new places. I wanted to interact with people, and you know, that initially took me before sort of getting a master's degree and then moving on to a PhD. I was in the Peace Corps around 2000. Mm-hmm. It took me to Bolivia. So I lived in Bolivia in South America for about 3 years, and just got really interested in sort of environmental issues. And there, you know, the main issue, well, there is a lot of main issues there, but one of them was water, disputes over water. And, you know, about every 3 months, the country itself would sort of paralyze into massive protests for one thing or another. And I just became really interested in how the environment influences, you know, people's daily lives. And I was also a mountain climber, so I spent a lot of time like rock and ice climbing. Mm-hmm. And in Bolivia, I got to spend quite a bit of time climbing the big Andean peaks there. And, you know, I had spent about 10 years, you know, I ended up doing my dissertation in part in Bolivia. So over like a 10-year period, you could visibly see the impact of the melting glaciers. And, you know, part of my research that I went on to do at the University of Arizona was looking at how changing melting glaciers influenced, you know, water supplies for people downriver. My time in the Peace Corps sort of introduced me to the ways that people interact with the environment and some of the challenges that they deal with. You know, that brought me back to, you know, wanting to actually study this and make a life out of thinking about these issues. And, you know, I really think the academic world is full of creativity. You know, you can do some really, really good things. It's a little bit removed from the everyday life of people, let's say, but there's ways to make that fit. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that, I think, right, in a following segment. But yeah, that's a little bit about sort of how I ended up at the University of Arizona and, you know, have been there, like I said, since, you know, prior to actually doing my PhD, I caught on with a research group called the Climate Assessment for the Southwest. that focused on climate information and providing technical information to decision making here in the Southwest, and started that in 2008, and then moved on to, you know, a PhD, and, you know, have been here ever since.
So what's your current assignment at the U of A? What are you specializing in research wise, and what department are you in, and what are you doing now?
So I'm affiliated with a couple departments, School of Geography and the School of Natural Resources and Environment, but my main home is the Arizona Institute for Resilience, which is sort of a collection of interdisciplinary programs. I am what they call a soft money researcher. So I have a little bit of an institutional commitment from the U of A, but the majority of my funding, like, I generate on my own. So I'm entrepreneurial in that sense, I guess.
Right.
Try to raise through grants, through, you know, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration or the National Science Foundation or USAID. And so just constantly trying to sort of, come up with ideas and form teams and work on important, or interesting topics. You know, more recently, much of my work focuses internationally. And it is in some way related to, working on topics that intersect with how people manage a weather and climate variable world. We call this sort of climate information services. And I guess the central idea is, like, how can technical information about our environment be brought to bear more effectively on decision-making? And that can be sort of at the weather timescale, at the, like, 1 to 7 day timescale. It can be, you know, at the monthly timescale. It can even go on to seasonal, and even beyond to climate change. So, you know, science can generate information on a variety of different dimensions, temporal dimensions. So we have good information about, like, historical climate back 100 years, say, from thermometers, let's say, you know, and then we move into prediction and forecasting. You know, weather forecasts have been instrumental in allowing, you know, our society to better prepare itself for weather risks like flooding or severe storms, tornadoes, and that sort of thing. And then even beyond, like I said, like, we have some information. It's not nearly as good as the weather forecast, but we have some information at sort of seasonal and subseasonal levels.
Great. When we come back, we'll talk about the good old monsoon here in the Southwest and what that means to Tucson and southern Arizona. And then we'll talk about a fun little project that you and your collaborators are working on. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Wonder Series from the University of Arizona. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday Wonder Edition with good stories and great things happening at the University of Arizona. Our guest this segment is Zach Guido. He's with the Arizona Institute of Resilience. Let's talk a little bit, Zach, about the monsoon, right? We're, you know, we are creatures of the desert, and it's nice to have the monsoon rains come through every summer. Tell us a little bit about the predictability of the monsoons and why the monsoon is so important to the desert.
So the monsoon is my favorite topic to talk about because it is such an amazing feature. And I really do feel like it provides an identity here in the Southwest. I mean, everybody sort of collectively has an interest in the monsoon. I think one of the questions that I field more than any other question related to weather and climate is, what's a monsoon going to be like? And we could talk a little bit about that. We don't have great answers for it, like, ahead of time, and that's part of the fun. But, you know, it is a feature here that's that always comes around. I mean, we have good monsoons, like we did the last couple years, or I should say 21, 22 was a fairly good monsoon. Last year was not a good monsoon. 2020 was a terrible monsoon. So there's a lot of variability in it, but it's a feature that comes around, usually starts around the 1st of July historically. But of course there is, you know, a couple week, you know, variability in that. It produces for the Tucson area and the southern parts of Arizona, you know, about half the annual rainfall. So we have two rainy seasons, if you will, a wintertime rain and the monsoon. And so in the 2 to 3 months of the monsoon, we get about at the airport, it's about 5.5 inches of rain, and that changes depending on where you are geographically, and as you go up the mountains, it gets obviously more rain. So yeah, the monsoon season tends to start in July, and it persists through September. The National Weather Service, for communication purposes, have defined it as beginning June 15th and ending in September, at the end of September, September 30th. You know, and there's a lot of different flavors of the monsoon, both in terms of each year, but also within the monsoon. Like, as you move toward the latter parts of the season, there's more of an influence from recurving or tropical storms that begin in the Pacific Ocean, that sort of move north, but then get into the westerlies and get entrained back toward the east into our area. And that can really change, like, the statistics of the monsoon if you sort of look at it retrospectively. But it's a really important feature for a couple reasons. One is the onset of the monsoon tends to quell the fire season. And, you know, prior to the onset, we're at the height of our fire season. I mean, what Ruidoso just experienced, I don't know if people that are paying attention might have known that, you know, massive fire happened there, you know, destroyed, you know, 500 homes or something. Two people lost their lives. And, you know, this is a persistent hazard in the Southwest fire. So when the monsoon comes, it tends to dampen the fire risk. It also helps take the top off of our heat season. You know, June is really difficult. There's wicked heat here in June and at the end of May. And when you get the monsoon come in, you get cloud cover, you get the cooling effect of rain. So it's really important environmentally as well.
So you have predictability. I was just sitting here thinking that, you know, the United States has been a country for about 250 years, and the monsoon just keeps coming. It's been coming for centuries, right? It's kind of predictable that it will always have that. Not always. Probably a million years ago, we weren't having the monsoons like we have here now, but it's fairly predictable each year. There's going to be some monsoons, which kind of gets us to the bracket. And you and your colleagues have started something called the Monsoon Fantasy Forecast. Tell us a little bit about that great project.
Yeah, so thank you for that. This was sort of a pet project by a couple colleagues of mine at the University of Arizona. And basically the idea was, I mean, the monsoon is really difficult to talk about because there is so much nuance to it. There's nuance in its geographical expression, its temporal expression, the different kinds of variables that you have to look for, the intensity of rainfall, for example, what are the driving causes of the monsoon? All of these things sort of are fit together and create, you know, ultimately when you look back, like what the character of the monsoon was. And it became something that was difficult to talk about because of all the variability. And so colleagues and I started a podcast, the Southwest Climate Podcast. And part of it was like, we were just, you know, discussing and sort of in a nonlinear way, is an easier format to talk about the monsoon than sort of trying to write about it, if you will. And so through that, it just sort of naturally evolved. Like prior to, each monsoon season, I sort of asked my colleague, well, what do you think it is? What do you think the monsoon's going to be like? And so that sort of prompted the idea, well, maybe we should just ask that question over to the audience, to the public. And again, like I mentioned before, it's people want to know what the monsoon's going to be like. And it's, as you mentioned, there's good predictability in a sense. Like, we know the monsoon's going to happen, but when it will start, what it'll look like. I mean, science doesn't have great tools for that, particularly in advance. And so this is something where we just sort of ask a question to the audience. And we created a sort of fantasy football or March Madness kind of a system where people can make their forecasts at five cities, Tucson, Phoenix, Flagstaff, Albuquerque, and El Paso, and they would make their forecast for the monthly total rainfall there. And they score points based on how accurate, but also how risky their forecast is. So if they're going to, you know, forecast, go back to 2021 when we had 8 inches of rain in Tucson, the most rainfall that has ever fallen in a month at the airport. If they had, they would have got more points if they had forecasted for 8 inches than if they would have forecasted for a more likely outcome, let's say 1.5 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And so they score points based on their riskiness and their accuracy, and they do that each month. So there's 15 forecasts that they make over the monsoon period, and they play against each other. And this year, like, you can form groups, so you can play against, you know, just an individual, like a work group, for example. But you can also see, much like you know, March Madness, like the who's winning the sort of global competition, and we have prizes.
Right. You have some gift cards that people can win, so mm-hmm. there's a little incentive for them.
Little incentive, yeah.
And so can anybody participate in this, or is this just reserved for scientists that know what's going on?
In fact, knowing a little bit about the monsoon might actually not help you out all that much. anybody can play. You just have to sign up for it. It doesn't cost anything. And you can actually win Amazon gift cards. And, you know, if you're really lucky, let's say, or good, I'll open it up to that. You know, there's monthly prizes, so $100 gift card that you can win. So you could win all three of those. And then the winner of the total points over the entire season would earn an additional $300. So you can, you know, win up to $600. So it's not mm-hmm. trivial.
So if someone wanted to get involved in it or look at it and see what you have, where do they go to find out about the Monsoon Fantasy Forecast game?
Yeah, so I'm forgetting the URL, but basically just Google search Monsoon Fantasy University of Arizona, or Monsoon Fantasy.
That's exactly where it is.
Yeah.
Monsoonfantasy.arizona.edu.
There you go.
Yeah, and so they can go there, they can look at that and play, or just kind of look and see what's going on and get involved in forecasting. Yeah.
Right. If I have a moment, I'd also like to say the impetus of this game is sort of, we have these working ideas that, you know, enjoying the monsoon would influence people's, you know, learning behaviors. So if we could, you know, creating games like can you know, might incentivize people to go out and learn more about the monsoon or more about climate in general. So there was a little bit of an incentive there.
Yeah, it's engagement learning, if you will, of trying to get people a little bit more focused on, you know, not, hey, open the door and it's raining, but why is this happening and what is the effect of it?
And exactly. And if they're just sort of paying more attention on a day-to-day basis, maybe the game would incentivize them to, you know, look at the forecast for something like... We're not studying this because this is just something that we're doing on in our free time. But we think, and there is evidence in the literature that the games and you know, constantly paying attention to your environment, like, does influence learning behaviors and other kinds of behaviors.
Yeah, and I can see this also eventually that younger people, middle schoolers, even high schoolers, might get involved in this and just kind of fun, just to kind of. Be engaged with the monsoon, which we're going to get every year, no matter what.
Well, yeah, we hope so. And you know, related to that, I think for us personally, you know, studying climate, like, is often portrayed as a villain. I mean, there's usually the news about it. Like, climate change is highly politicized. You know, we focus a lot in the media on these extreme events for good reason. You know, but it's largely seen as this hazard or this risk or this villain. And I do think that the sort of collective perception or consciousness of the monsoon here is one of joy. And so we're sort of just tapping into, people's excitement about the monsoon and flipping that narrative a little bit and trying to engage people on the sort of positive side of climate, because I do think it creates a unique identity here in the Southwest.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Zach Guido from the Arizona Institute of Resilience, a research faculty member at the University of Arizona, and his perspective on the monsoon and the monsoon fantasy game. Fantastic. We appreciate your good work that you're doing at the University of Arizona and the research that you're conducting on climate change and climate, how it affects us in the world. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. We're continuing with our Jump in Tucson series, Wonder at the University of Arizona. You know, celebrating the wonderful things that are going on at the U of A every day at the U of A. Something is happening in research and student learning, student outcomes and community engagement, all over the state of Arizona as the land-grant university for the state of Arizona. The U of A permeates all corners of the state and does some wonderful things. And so Jump in Tucson on Mondays talks about the good things that are going on at the University of Arizona. And I know most of you have driven up Campbell Avenue by the river. And off to your right, as you're heading up north to the foothills, you see this big, giant facility that the University of Arizona has. And we'll talk a little bit about that whole complex and what it's there for and what it does. And with us is Jess Luce. She is with the Tucson Village Farm and with the Cooperative Education at the University of Arizona. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for sharing all the good things growing in Tucson.
That's great. I like the way you say good things growing. That's a good segue. I'm in the marketing business, so that's a good thing. So good things are growing at the Tucson Village Farm and the Cooperative Extension. So before we get started in talking about what's happening up there on Campbell Avenue, let's talk a little bit about Jess and about your travels and what got you to that position in development and engagement, community engagement at the farm. How did you become involved? What's your educational background, and how did you get to Tucson and take on this job?
Sure, absolutely. So I was actually going to U of A. Started going to U of A in 2012. Around 2014, I enrolled in what I thought would be a very easy once a week Monday night class, and that class ended up being an 8-hour a week internship, where I was placed at a Montessori school as their garden teacher. Mm-hmm. I had no background in gardening, but neither did the second and the third graders that I was working with. So we all kind of figured it out together. And shortly into my time at the Montessori school, the teachers that I was working with sent me to a training at Tucson Village Farm. And I'll never forget that first day going to the farm. I remember being super inspired, one, by the people that were working at the farm, the feel of the farm, but also the mission and the vision. I wasn't someone who grew up really connected to any kind of urban farm or knowing where my food came from. So learning the kind of skills that they were teaching young people, I think, was quite revolutionary to me, and also so simple. And I felt like I couldn't believe that I got to my 20s without anyone telling me, just eat real food. And so I got super passionate. I finished my internship at the Montessori school. I did two internships at Tucson Village Farm. I continued as an AmeriCorps, doing a 200-hour, then a 300-hour, then a 900-hour, and have continued working at the farm in various capacities, sometimes as a volunteer, sometimes as a contractor, for the past 10 years. And 2 years ago was lucky enough to be hired on full-time as their community engagement and development coordinator.
It's kind of an interesting facility as you head up Campbell there as you're heading north. On the left side is some research facilities for agriculture in terms of livestock and other things that are going on there. So that's on one side of the street,
yep.
Right? And so the College of Agricultural Life and Environmental Sciences is in charge of that facility. And again, as being a land-grant university, one of the important things that the university does is, work off the land, and the land was given to each state, and each university got some land, and they got to research the land and do what we do with land, agricultural wise and so forth. And so it is a really important part of the mission of the University of Arizona to study agriculture and things like that. And so on the right side, the east side of Campbell, as you go up, is the Tucson Village Farm. It's a pretty large facility and has a lot going on there. If you just drive by it, you may not know that back in the back there, there's a lot of land,
yeah,
a lot of things going on. So what's actually going on at the Village Farm? If you kind of drive around in your mind, if you're thinking about, okay, I'm going to go around to the different places we have here, what is on that facility up there by the river?
Yeah, so it's a huge growing urban farm. We started with about 1 or 1.5 acres, and that's the area you see right across the street from Trader Joe's. If you're driving on Campbell, you might notice all the bright colors. And that is where we started. 15 years ago now, that's where the first seeds were planted. And so that's where we do a lot of our school field trips. That's where we're doing our youth engagement. We run lots of summer camps and community outreach events. About 5 years ago, we got an Angel Charity grant, and this grant allowed us to really grow on our mission. So we were teaching youth where food comes from, how to grow it, but we really wanted to teach them how to prepare it. We didn't really have a facility to actually cook the food, and it required lots of money and time and big dreams coming true to actually expand on our farm area. So if you actually take a right on Roger Road, you'll stumble upon what we call our big farm. So the original space right across from Trader Joe's, we call our little farm. If you head down Roger, you'll hit a little dirt path. We have a building. It actually used to be a turf research grass center that we converted to be a culinary education space. And then behind that building, we have 10 more acres of growing space. So what used to be just about one and a half acres, we now have nearly 15. We just got funding for a brand new fruit orchard. So we have nearly 50 fruit trees growing. This is as of this January. We grow all sorts of different vegetables and have different classrooms. We have an art classroom, a cooking classroom, and yeah, good things growing and growing all the time.
How many kids do you think, you know, as you drive up there sometimes, you look over and there's a bunch of little kids out in the in the little farm. How many kids do you think on an annual basis are traversing through the farm and learning about growing food and so forth? It's a lot, I'm sure.
But, it's about 11,000 a year.
Yeah.
So we have big numbers nearly every single day, especially Monday through Friday during the school year. We'll have kids coming to learn. So this could vary. Sometimes we have 40 kids. Sometimes we have 170. Mm-hmm. And these field trips happen Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays.
And they're age appropriate for the little guys. It's very basic and so forth. But when you get into middle school and beyond, it's a little more intricate as to what's happening.
Yeah, and we kind of build our curriculum so that it's age appropriate. Our youngest programming starts at 2 years old. The 2 to 5 year old program is called Little Sprouts. There's no research on it yet, but I say Little Sprouts keeps kids out of prison. The elementary program is called Growing Forward. Our middle and high school program is called Digging Deeper. And we also work with teachers both before and after those field trips to kind of plant seeds before they come out to the farm and then be able to continue on the curriculum and what they've learned once they head back into the classrooms.
So as part of your job of engagement and development, you're actually doing two things at the same time. You're engaging the community and schools and other groups to engage with the Tucson Village Farm, but you're also probably engaging with support and grants and trying to get money to help support the endeavor. And that's an ongoing process, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think because we are under the umbrella of the University of Arizona and the Cooperative Extension, there's a lot of assumption that we get a lot of funding from the University of Arizona and that we actually get all of our money from donations, grants, and very small program fees. And it's important that the people that are coming to the farm that really need the education can continue to get that education for a low rate, and we want to have lots of scholarship opportunities. So we do really rely on the community, and I think one of the things that I'm doing is when I first started as the community engagement and development coordinator is Tucson Village Farm is an amazing resource for the community, and I think a lot of the school systems are tapped into that and they know about it, but the community at large, it's almost like it's Tucson's best kept secret. Right. And we're growing so much food. And
we should get you on Jump in Tucson every once in a while and have you talk about how great the Tucson Village Farm is.
Yeah, totally. Anytime.
But doing this kind of promotion and engaging with the community is an important part of the process, and having people understand what the resources are available to
absolutely.
Tucson Village Farm. And so this is all part of Cooperative Extension, correct? Which is
Yep. We are under the umbrella of Cooperative Extension, and I know you touched on this. There's one in every single county and every single state in the United States, so a great resource for every single person living in the U.S.
Right. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Tucson Village Farm and about what Jess Luce's job is there and what she does for the community and what they're trying to do to educate young people and the community about food and growing things in our wonderful desert. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday Wonder edition of the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Coming up on Tuesday, you'll have Ted Maxwell. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger. On Thursday, we have Visit Tucson and Tom Moulton, the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And then I'll be back on Friday with success stories from businesses and organizations who are doing good things in Tucson. On Mondays, we talk about the great things going on at the University of Arizona. One of them is something that you've probably driven by a number of times, the Tucson Village Farm and the whole cooperative extension setting at Campbell and the river, basically, across from Trader Joe's is a good landmark for people. We're speaking with Jess Luce. She is the Director of Community Engagement and Development for the Tucson Village Farm. And so welcome back.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit. You mentioned early on that you had spent some time with AmeriCorps yourself, and AmeriCorps' mission is to go around the country and work in places that need help and places that build community and so forth. And so you spent 1,400 hours or so doing that. But you have a lot of engagement with students who, young people who are giving their time and talents to help out around the farm, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say Tucson Village Farm is unique in that we get AmeriCorps members of all ages. I think when people find the farm, they want to get involved and they often want to stay involved. And so our rate of having AmeriCorps members come back time and time again is quite remarkable. But people have the opportunity to work, one, within agriculture. We have a culinary education center. We have a ropes course. So I think a lot of people can kind of find their special niche within the farm.
And one of the things that the community can engage with is the Tuesday market. Can you tell us a little bit about what goes on Tuesdays at the Village Farm?
Yes. Tuesday Market is probably one of the best kept secrets in Tucson, although we don't want it to be like that. We are an open public, so anyone can come from Tuesdays 4 to 6 at our big farm location. The address is 2201 East Roger Road. We like to say look for the windmill, and we sell all of our local grown produce as well as a fresh made soup every week. We sell salad, we sell desserts, we sell lemonade, and we just have so many wholesome, fresh things growing, and we're growing every single day, every single year. And so as we grow, we need help getting all the delicious food into the mouths of Tucson.
So as you drive up Oracle and you turn right there and go east, right? And that's how...
Yeah, if you're driving up Campbell, you'll take a right on Roger and just go all the way down. You'll hit a dirt road. And then we actually do our market on our back Ramada. So you actually get to see the farm. It's really beautiful. Sunset, it's the best spot in town. We have a really good view.
And that happens every Tuesday. And what if, like, say a holiday falls on a Tuesday, like 4th of July or something? Do you still do it, or do you have...
You know, it does vary. Once in a while, maybe two times a year, we will stop the market. The best way to stay in the loop is to follow us on social media, Instagram or Facebook at Tucson Village Farm. We also have a weekly newsletter. Our Tuesday regulars love the newsletter. Every week we post what we're selling, and it does vary week to week. There's kind of some staples. We're known for our focaccia bread. We make delicious bread every single week. We make delicious cookies. And then again, all that seasonal produce that's rotating with the seasons.
That's cool. So you're the director of development, and so you try to get donations from grants and from different ways that people can fund from the community. You need everything from, you were mentioning, fencing systems to shade, ongoing shade for the groups that are working and the classes that are coming out. But then also things like teaching materials and Sharpies and whiteboards and stuff that a teacher would need in a classroom. And so as a self-funding organization, you could use a lot of help.
We could use a lot of help. We're really grateful for all the Tucson community members and far beyond that do support us. But it takes a village to do what we do. We're having 15,000 people come through a year to learn. So every day we're doing programming with 60 to 170 people. There's something happening on the farm probably every single day of the week at this point. And on top of all that programming, we're a working urban farm. And so it requires a lot of materials, a lot of time, a lot of staffing, all which are things that we really need help with. And I think when people find out about the mission and they hear the impact of our work, it's a super easy thing to give to. And we take monetary donations. There's ways for people to support us by buying a brick and having an engravement on our front patio. There's all different levels of giving, and we're certainly open to them all. And in addition to that, we also just take support in the form of people coming out and helping and volunteering. And we find that our volunteers are a super happy bunch because they're getting out in the sun and they're getting their hands dirty. And so, yeah, all support is welcome.
As we do jump in Tucson here, we talk about business success stories. And so business isn't a focal point of what we do. I could see this as a great call and make arrangements and come do a team building thing and bring your staff out on a Thursday or Friday and kind of see what's going on at the farm and just experiencing that for a few hours. What a great team building project. And then from that, maybe some development would happen from that.
Yeah, we love having corporations and organizations come out. We have a 4-H high ropes course, and I think some people are intimidated when they see it because they think, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to climb super high. And the great thing about Tucson Village Farm and what we're doing is a lot of the curriculum that we're doing with the kids is just as great for adults. And so I love that idea of bringing organizations out, having them either do a program or just volunteer and helping spreading the word that way.
What if you were just meandering around? What do you want to do today? I don't know. What do you want to do today? I don't know. What do you want to do today? And can they just show up at the Tucson Village Farm and get engaged somehow? Or do they have to kind of make a prereq and kind of get in touch with you in advance?
There's specific days where it's better to pop up. Because we have so many schools and so many kids, we don't always encourage people just stopping by anytime. Right. Although Little Farm, which is just right next to the Pima County Cooperative Extension, is kind of a space for anyone to go and to use that resource. We have our chickens, we have our worms, we have all the good things growing. So people can go and walk around there. And then if they want to go see Big Farm, I would definitely recommend coming on that Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. and then staying in the loop because we do two public tours a month. We're kind of slowing down in the summer just because the heat, but I like to call these field trips for grown-ups. The field trips include people going on a hay wagon ride, seeing both of our locations, learning about what we do, and we try to feed everyone that comes. So everyone that comes get a farm fresh snack.
So we're talking to Jess Luce. She's the Tucson Village Farm Director of Development and Community Outreach. And so as you say, it's one of Tucson's secrets that is a little gem up on Campbell Avenue there. So it's just for those people that don't know where it is, it's on Campbell, just at the corner of Roger, before you get to the river. It's off to the east side, the right side of the street there. And you can see the bright colors of the little farm, but the big farm is back in the back, and it's an extensive, pretty amazing place to go. So if you haven't been there, it's a great thing to kind of get involved and encouraged to be engaged in that process.
Yeah, we would love to welcome everyone.
And if they have a school and they want to get engaged with a tour, they just call and make those arrangements. And
Yep. So we'll start booking for our fall field trips early August. And so the teachers can find all the information on the website. And we book out pretty quickly these days. We're hoping to keep increasing our staff because we have more requests than we have time at this point.
Is that where volunteers could help us help shepherd those kids through that process if they wanted to?
Yeah, if someone wants to volunteer as an educator, we'll train them. So we'll teach them the curriculum, we'll give them the skills and the tools and the confidence to actually lead with groups. So it's great for people that are kind of unsure if they want to go into the teaching field or not. And it's outdoor education, so it's really fun.
And in Tucson here, it's 12 months a year, and it's pretty nice. A little hot right now in the summertime maybe, and maybe a few days in the winter it's a little bit cold, but most of the time it's pretty nice to be outside working in the garden, and especially at 4 to 6 on a Tuesday to go out and take a look around and see what's going on on the big farm and so forth. Well, thank you so much, Jess Luce. She is the Director of Development and Community Engagement for the Tucson Village Farm, part of the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension Program through the College of Agricultural Life and Environmental Sciences at the University of Arizona. So thank you for being with us today. If you'd like to be on Jump in Tucson and like to be interviewed, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know. We'd love to have you interviewed sometime in the future. Thank you, Jess, for coming today.
Of course,
thank you all for listening. You're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk station. We'll see you Friday. Stay tuned tomorrow for Ted Maxwell.